Welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. This is your host, Ishai Breslauer. Here we meet every Monday to talk commercial real estate and prop tech. We will dive deep into the different asset classes, discuss the market, talk about the new and exciting technologies, meet key people in the industry, and get some inspiration. Let's begin. Hey guys, before we start, I just want to point out the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. It's a free download. Go to the text side and you will find it. It has absolutely great information, completely free, how to become a landlord, how to determine the value of a property, or creative financing for commercial real estate. All of it is completely free. Go download it. Also, I want to point out my CRE crash course. It's a 2-week must-have program with a must-have skills for commercial real estate, like investment strategies, the must-have financial terms, how a deal is done. Go take a look at it, go to the text side and click on the link. And now let's continue with our program. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. Hope you guys are doing fantastic. And today is prop tech talk. We're going to talk a lot of prop tech today. It's going to be a lot of fun. Jeffrey Berman is with us today, and he has an incredible profile on LinkedIn. I can tell you that much. And he's involved in 5,000 things. Jeffrey, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
You know what? Before we dig into your story, your personal, you know, how you got involved with all these things you got involved with, can you give us a 2-minute elevator pitch of what you guys do today?
Sure. So for the people that know me, Jeffrey Berman, I'm with Camber Creek. We are the first dedicated venture capital firm for the real estate industry. And our genesis was way back in 2008. Hard to believe, but I think that was pre-iPhone. And since then, we've invested in a few dozen companies. So we're a hyper sniper, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later. I'll explain what I mean by that. And we're investing out of our 4th fund. And our model is predicated on our ability to add value through our limited partner network, as well as creating a venture return profile for our investors. So that's who we are. Now, I'm sure I made that ambiguous enough that there's got to be follow-up questions.
Oh, yeah. Very excited. Tell me something before we get into that, you know, because prop tech is originated obviously from, you know, from real estate, and most of the people who came and pioneered prop tech are people who had some or more, I would say, real estate orientation or whatever you want to call it. Where did you come from? How did you get into this whole world of business? If you could go way back.
So the genesis of Camber Creek is actually with my partner and cousin, Casey Berman. Casey was the president of operations for our family office real estate development and holding company. It's multi-generational and owned assets up and down the East Coast, and I believe as well in the Midwest. And in 2007 and 8, when the real estate crisis was starting to take hold, that's when we, and I'll refer to that time as we, because that's when Casey and I were still in the business, we're looking at acquiring property all over the country. And buildings were selling for pennies in the dollar because there was significant distress. At the same time, we recognized that we had legacy assets that were going to essentially be under attack, as it were, with the proliferation of brand new assets being sold for pennies in the dollar. If you have a choice between leasing a brand new building for X and a 50, 60, 70-year-old building for the same dollars per foot, you're going to go with a new building. Add to that, the way that we were operating the business, Casey recognized, was the same as the way our grandfathers, et cetera, had operated the business, which didn't make much sense because even though there wasn't an ecosystem of technology around real estate, there was still tools at our disposal that we could use in order to create more efficiencies in the business. So Casey really should be credited worldwide with being one of the first people that recognized that there was a systematic and programmatic way of looking at real estate operations and bringing technology to them. Because again, at that point, technology for real estate was your cell phone. And again, I think we're talking about predating the iPhone, your computer, and a fax machine. So not exactly cutting edge technology. And at that time, he started looking at companies that were accretive in value to our own portfolio and what we owned, and creating efficiencies in workflow. And a light bulb went off in his head and he said, wow, this is a really large opportunity set. It's all essentially greenfield. Nobody is looking at technology holistically for real estate. We should be investing in the companies that we could use in our own portfolio. And that was really the seed that was planted. And it wasn't until a few years later that I joined him in the effort, and I recognized that it was a coupling of two things that I loved, which was creating and helping grow businesses, and also creating and growing innovation within what many people refer to as a dinosaur business. So that was the genesis.
Beautiful story and inspiring as well. I want to ask you, it's probably a question for you to know, because what Casey went through, and I guess you joined him and you went through it as well. I went through it also. The one difficulty, and you've mentioned it in a way, one difficulty with real estate is that it's an old school type of industry. And everyone in real estate was, I wouldn't say anti-technology, but you could say that in certain ways. It was very, very difficult to enter the old school type work and then come and say, hey, tech is coming in and you guys should join the party. And I remember so much objection. How did you guys experience that? What was your feedback in the very beginning? And how did you overcome that?
So I'm going to break that down into its component parts, which is to first address the comment you made about real estate being a dinosaur business. And essentially what you said, not verbatim, was difficult to sell into. So because you have a cohort that has operated in a certain way for so long that resistance to change is heavy. The real reason for that is not an allergy to technology. The real reason for that is that the industry as a whole makes so much money doing things the way they are currently done and still currently done, that in itself becomes the resistance to change. Because if you're making a boatload of money and someone says to you, well, I can create efficiencies, you're going to say, why? Why fix something that may not necessarily be broken? And for us, that actually directly informed what became our investment thesis, which is very simple. Two questions. The first is, can we use this product, software, service within our portfolio matrix, which we define as the buildings that we and our LPs own, the tenants, residents, and guests who live, work, and stay in those buildings, and the vendors who serve all three. As of our fourth fund, we have billions and billions of square feet of space globally that we can look to discern whether or not this product, software, or service is usable within that portfolio matrix. And if you do the math and you think about it permutationally, the number of potential relationships that can be created from the ownership, the folk that are using the properties, and the vendors who are serving it is massive. And then the second question is the more important question from the seat that I'm sitting in as a venture capital professional, which is, can we make a venture capital return? That is the top disqualifier for any company that we look at, because the vast majority of the companies that we look at, and we look at well over 1,000 opportunities a year, satisfy the first question. They can be used, but most, the vast majority, cannot or doesn't really have a hope of creating that venture return scenario. So for us, if you look at our portfolio, we've invested in less than I think maybe it's slightly over 36 companies in the last decade plus. So I referred to us earlier as a hyper sniper. Hyper because we see as many opportunities as the next guy. Sniper because we are incredibly diligent about the companies we invest in, when we invest in them, how we invest in them, and why we invest in them. And that's created a track record that our LPs are pretty happy with.
Tell me something. All those companies that you guys eventually chose, and you said that you want to see that there's a potential for growth, obviously, potential for, I would say, serious revenues. That's very hard to predict and very hard to see. So what makes a business model of such company interesting to you?
So
it's very general. It's very hard, but I know. But if you could like sort of give us a
no. For us, it's actually pretty easy. And this is our secret sauce, which is not rocket science. We use the term beta lab to describe our LPs. And we have LPs of varying sizes, from groups that are worth a few hundred million to groups that are worth tens of billions and more. And if you think about the innovation curve, you have your early adopters all the way through your laggards. And our LP network comprises folk from across that spectrum. Before we invest in any company, we apply that company's product, software, service to that LP network where it is appropriate. And from that, we can underwrite the opportunity just within our own LP network for creation of a venture capital return. And that's why, again, we've been so thoughtful about the investments that we make and so careful about the investments that we make and diligent about the investments that we make.
So basically what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying that you're going to take a company that you got excited about into a beta test, basically, to see that they actually work and to actually, they will have to implement their technology into a property or service or whatever.
Or be on the path.
Yeah. And you want to see that it works and, you know, the potential will be coming eventually. So that's what you want to see.
Yes, we are very specific with our investors to say that our core funds, of which we are investing out of our fourth, does not gamble. You'll never hear my partners or I referring to any of our core fund investments as a bet. Many venture capitalists do. That's fine for them. That's not our model. Our model is predicated on understanding what this company's trajectory is going to look like through our limited partner network and the mirror / analogs that those groups have in the wider real estate world.
You guys, obviously, how many years are you into this whole thing?
11, 12. I stopped counting because it ages me.
It ages
gray hair.
Awesome. Better gray than far away, they say. Tell me something.
I like that.
Yeah, and you have good hair. I wish I had that hair. I had this big, thick thing in the past. trust me, it's going away. I want to ask you the following. You guys started, why did I mention the many years that you guys are in the business? Because you started probably in a certain size of a fund, and you're now in a different place. Can you tell us about the evolution and the growth, the difficulties, the hardships in terms of the business, and where you were, the amount of funding that you had then versus the now, the team, et cetera?
Absolutely. So we have grown exponentially in the last number of years. And I think, and this really seems to be rather obvious in hindsight, but when we started, this notion of real estate technology was not something that was readily talked about. And it took a number of years for the real estate community to grasp what that meant and then to latch onto it. And I think what you've seen over the last number of years, and the last 2 years in particular with the pandemic, which I'm sure we're going to discuss, that quite a few of the technology innovations that have been created within the industry have become need to haves versus nice to haves. And I think that's made our job, plus the capital allocators, plus the funders, our collective jobs quite a bit easier, because when you think about real estate as the largest asset class on the planet, and then understanding the necessity to innovate what is one of the oldest businesses in world history, you have this massive opportunity, and capital follows opportunities once they have been well established, which I think we're in a time where this is no longer becoming a fringe investment sector. People are looking at real estate technology / prop tech / con tech / retail tech, et cetera, as something that is a viable yield generator or viable alpha return generator.
It's definitely huge. It's definitely huge. It's getting bigger every day. What was the first fund? How big was the first fund?
The first fund was a whopping $6 million. And amazing. That was way back when. And I think the year that vintage, I think something like between $60 and $100 million was the grand total sum of money that went into the prop tech sphere. So we were not an insignificant portion of that. And we've grown quite a bit. And I want to be very careful about talking about the amounts that we've raised, because I want to be sensitive to the fact that there are specific rules around around that. So I prefer not to talk actual numbers, but we are exponentially larger than that with assets under management at this point.
That's very, very interesting. And I'm sure it was very difficult in the very beginning to talk to LPs about this. They probably went was like, what? Prop what? And I'm sure it was a lot more challenging than today. That's for sure.
Certainly. And I think what's also changed is the appetite for innovation in our space has also grown quite a bit. You'll certainly still have the groups that are really excited about looking at every new widget or software. And then you're still certainly going to have the groups that are resistant to any kind of change in their workflow, et cetera, because they're large organizations and they don't want to upset the apple cart. But the attitude towards this innovation is certainly quite a bit different now than it was when we were first starting out.
Tell me something. You guys go for what stages of those startups?
Great question. So the core funds are focused on Series A and later. And I would just like to say, and because I see some of the Sfarim, I'll use the word orthodox.
Yeah.
Orthodox
the
adherence
books,
to
for those
venture.
Who don't understand. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Orthodox adherence to venture nomenclature is not really a big thing with us. There are some funds that say we'll only do seed, we'll only do A, et cetera. That's not our focus. We look for opportunity. What we have found is that the sweet spot is Series A, which has grown considerably in the last number of years, both in volume and size of the rounds. And that's typically because we're looking for market proven technology / software / innovation. We are not the core funds do not incubate, we accelerate. We are the rocket fuel that helps them grow. So if you look at the last number of deals that we've done, you'll see A, you'll see B, you'll see Series C, you'll see the odd seed, but they're typically all market ready. They have market proof, and in some small way, it doesn't have to be huge, but then we can take that and underwrite and extrapolate through our own LP what the company's ramp might look like.
That's very cool. I love that. Wow, so exciting. And the world today is more exciting than it used to be. And I just want to share with you something that I think I said it in the past, that when I got excited about, meaning the idea of PropTech, someone mentioned PropTech. I said, you know what, let's explore what it is. It was obviously years ago. And I think I went to either the first or second MIPIM conference at the time, just to walk around, you know, just to get the feel for what in the world is going on there. And I remember walking around, meaning just to describe that first conference, walking around which was totally different than the next one and obviously the ones after. The first one was you had a few very exciting technologies, maybe virtual reality, you know, stuff like that, and maybe a few more with potentially big data, which would be, you know, eventually big data. But who walked around in those conferences? The big guys, they were curious. All those big owners, the landlords, they were walking around and they were curious. What is it? What is it? They walked maybe with one other guy. And that was the first, I remember, I always told myself that whoever wanted to do some big business, that was the opportunity because they disappeared from the next, you know, from those next conferences. And they just sent their, you know, chief, you know, innovation officer. And then JLL came and all those big guys came in and that's it. And that was major conferences. But, you know, the evolution of PropTech is definitely there. What I want to ask you is from your experience, obviously from implementing all those technologies also as meaning not only investing, but implementing, which type of technology? Because you have so many within PropTech. It's property management. It's everything within the property management, you know, world. Then you have construction tech. I can go on and on. Could you tell us which one made the most impact in the real estate industry?
So I'm going to change your question a little bit.
Go ahead.
And the way I'm going to change it is to describe the two types of companies that we invest in. And this is going to sound silly, but bear with me. Two types of companies, a platform level company and a niche company. Platform level company means exactly what the definition of platform is, that it can become a dominant instrument of a specific sector in the industry. So an example of that is we have a portfolio company called VTS. So VTS is considered one of the most successful prop tech companies in PropTech short history. And they are, for those that aren't aware of what VTS is, they are an information aggregator for commercial real estate. There's a lot, it's a catch-all phrase. It does a lot. It's portfolio level review, it's deal level review. They've recently gone on a spate of acquisitions, buying tenant experience applications. So they're a platform that other companies, niche companies that do one specific point solution type problem solving mechanism into the platform companies. So an example of niche, and by the way, niche companies can become platform companies, but they can start at a very detailed, hey, we're focusing on one area right now and we can grow. So an example of a niche company is our portfolio company, Bowery. Bowery was the world's first end-to-end technology-enabled appraisal firm. And I remember when I sat down, I was one of the first folks that sat down with the co-CEOs and co-founders, Noah and John. And I had asked them why they didn't want to sell as a SaaS model and sell directly to appraisers. And they laughed. These were, at the time, they were two young guys. They're older now. And they said, well, if you think about the average appraisal firm slash appraiser, they're pretty used to doing their job manually. And both of them came from the appraisal industry. And they were careful not to be ageist, but they were saying, look, this is how it was done. We want to transform it. And the only way for us to do that and do it adroitly is if we create our own appraisal firm. So they created an appraisal firm. Now, if you take a step, a level up, and you think about where an appraisal fits in the spectrum of a real estate transaction, it's just one piece of what has to happen for a real estate deal to consummate. You have the discovery, you have the diligence, you have the appraisal, you have the title, you have the legal, you have the notarization, the execution. So each one of those components is a niche of a wider what could become a platform play. And so that is essentially a description of the two types of companies that we invest in.
When it comes to construction tech, which is a very exciting topic within itself, you know, because there's so many exciting technologies within, and automations, you know, for the whole construction process. What do you think about that, and where is that industry is going, you know, going to lead us?
So construction is tough. We recently invested in a company called Bridget, and we invested in them because they're attacking one of the most intractable problems within construction, which is driving efficiency for personnel operations. And so I agree with you, with even within Contec, within all of the various aspects of the real estate business, there are multifaceted entry points for technology companies to address. So I think you can go from soup to nuts. You can describe every piece of the construction ceremony, let's call it, from the moment that someone is contracted to the moment that they have to pay their people, to subcontracting, to drones. All of it can be enhanced with technology. And I was very careful, by the way, not to use the word disrupted, because it's very difficult to disrupt such a infrastructure heavy business. There are certainly ways that that's going to happen.
Yes.
And I'm not even going to start prognosticating what that might look like, but it's an area that is ripe with opportunity. However, we also have to be careful, because construction ebbs and flows with various economic cycles. And if you're not careful, you can get quite hurt. So we are more diligent when we look at a construction technology startup, which should tell you how amazing the founders of Bridget are. When you compare it to, let's say, multifamily or even commercial office technology or product innovations, because they're more used to, and you can argue that it's a more stable market.
Much more stable market, for sure. I don't know, office, you know, that leads me to the next question. Are there technologies, because today the market is struggling with office, without a doubt. And that's the one asset class that everybody's asking, where's it going? What's going to happen to office? It's obviously not going away. You know, office is not going away, without a doubt, but it's going to change in a very serious way. And everybody's, you know, when you talk to office, everybody is giving you this big question mark above their head. Nobody knows. So the question to you is, when you see a technology with multifamily, it's pretty obvious that it's going to be needed. The question is if it's going to disrupt, or it's going to be, you know, somehow useful, or you know, the revenues are a potential at a certain point. Very nice. But when you talk about office, what do you guys look at due to what's going on today? And how is this going to evolve within this, you know, asset class?
So I can't give you an answer for that. What I can tell you is that we don't look at short-term horizons. We're looking at the long-term. So we agree that office is evolving. We have thought that for years, because as even prior to the pandemic, if you think about access to technology, right now I'm sitting in front of my cell phone, my iPad, my computer, and I can run my business from anywhere. And that is a process that we've been undergoing, frankly, as a species, for a number of years, as technological innovation has continued to accelerate. What the pandemic put a spotlight on was the fact that maybe we don't need to conceive of office the way we've conceived of it previously. And I'm going to shift the conversation a little bit to one of our portfolio companies. It's focused on multifamily, but is really embracing this idea that I'll get to in a second, which is flexibility of an asset. If you think about the home that you're sitting in, or the home that I'm sitting in, or an office building that we might utilize, or a multifamily building, or retail, whatever, you have very specific zoning and use cases for each one of those buildings. Life is becoming more flexible, and the necessity to be able to say, hey, Yishai, today you're working in Gush, tomorrow you might be in Yerushalayim, the next day you might be in Paris. You need to be able to work from anywhere. Well, there are companies that are accelerating the process by which you're, let's say you worked for a very large company that wanted to keep track of where you were working, but also wanted to make sure that you had the infrastructure that you could be as productive as you possibly could. Those companies are starting to realize their real potential now. So another one of our, the company that I referred to earlier, multifamily called Y Hotel, has a product that is essentially taking over an entire building and flexing uses when seasonality dictates that maybe at some point it should, the majority of the space should be utilized as hotel. At some point it should be utilized as multifamily, retail, et cetera. So this idea that the buildings are going to be, have to become more flexible with usage, and then the spaces within those buildings and how the occupiers conceive of the utilization of their space, all that is shifting. So again, I'm not going to give you a prognostication of what I think is to come. That's irrelevant. What's going to happen is the industry itself, the occupiers, the employers are going to have to figure out a happy medium between being able to say, hey, you must come to work in an office and we must empower you to work from anywhere. And that is going to have a shift, and this will be a very large shift, which is to how office buildings are financed. Because if you think about the financing that a hotel has or a financing that a multifamily building has, and you're underwriting shorter duration cash flow with office buildings, historically, you've underwritten 5, 10, or 15-year cash flows. That might change as occupiers say, well, wait a second, we need to have flexibility in terms of how much space we are leasing because we don't want to have this massive expense burden. And that was an element to what happened to companies like WeWork and Knotel, why WeWork had to shift how they operated their business. It unfortunately took Knotel under. So you have this conflict between historically the way business has been done as far as financing these assets and what it's going to need to look like as the occupier and tenant mentality shifts. I hope that wasn't too much there.
No, it was great. But you know what leads me to what you spoke about WeWork, which was a very, very hot discussion a little bit over a year ago when, you know, the public offering went south. And that was before COVID. That's what you pretty much spoke about right now, that the usage is going to be different, et cetera. That's a discussion that is going to continue until, I guess, different technologies, different ideas are going to come into play. What happened to WeWork and why? And that is pre-pandemic. What happened to WeWork? Mm-hmm. Why did they, meaning I have my own opinion. A lot of people have their own opinion. There was, an interview just recently with Adam Neumann, but basically, what is your take on why that happened?
Well, I'll caveat this by saying that I was never a WeWork investor, and therefore my opinion should be summarily discounted, but for what it's worth, I'll give it. WeWork was being valued as a software company when they were at the time a poorly run real estate company. And so those two things weren't in equilibrium. And once the S1 that shook the world came out, people essentially woke up from the stupor and said, well, wait a second, what the hell is going on here?
Right.
And also, where's the technology? And that's changed. And now you have new leadership under Sandeep Mathrani, and he's doing a pretty good job. I would say, again, I'm not an investor. I don't know him personally. One of my partners does. And he's changing the way that the company operates. And there's no argument that can be made that WeWork and Adam and Miguel didn't help transform the way we think about fractional office.
They have. Yes.
It already existed. The company I worked for prior to Camber Creek had fractional offices. Regis obviously was a very large owner, yes, operator of those offices, but WeWork made it cool. So they certainly did a great service to the real estate industry, and they were certainly disruptive. But I think the story got away from them. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people got hurt. But I also think that that what came out of the ashes is a stronger and better placed company that we can look at and say, okay, well, the way they operate, the flexibility they offer occupiers may end up being the blueprint for the manner with which some portion of the office market conducts its business.
I want to shift gears a little bit. I want to ask you about you. We just spoke before about, and you said, you told us about the type of companies that you guys work with, looking for, et cetera. Which type would be a company? I guess that would be a pretty easy answer for you, but I'm curious about that. A company that you come into your door and you would say no right away. You just knock it off, meaning not interesting.
So,
meaning it's obvious why you would say no after vetting, meaning that could be a longer story, but I'm interested. A prop tech company comes along and you say, this is not. Give us an example.
I'm not going to give you a real example.
Not a real. Even hypothetical would be great.
Hypothetically speaking, you and I are both old enough to remember the .com and .bomb evisceration that happened in the early 2000s.
Yes.
Late 90s, early 2000s. And if you were paying attention to venture capital back then you noticed that massive sums of money were being raised and deployed with anything that had the suffix .com appended to it. And I called those the, oh, look at me, I'm doing something cool. Now that real estate technology has really come into its own, or at least is starting to come into its own, depending on who you ask, there are quite a few companies that where we see decks cross our desk that may be construed as somewhat lazy facsimiles of other companies that are already in market. And when I see that, I typically have a fairly okay radar about, no, actually I'm going to say my radar is pretty damn good when it comes to things like this, where it's very rare that I'll see a deck that I'll just summarily dismiss unless it so badly misses the mark on a large market. It is typically after a first touch that we'll say, this isn't appropriate for Camber Creek. And unlike many venture investors, we do not like to prevaricate when we pass. I like to give people actual feedback. And it's something that has made us...
That is great.
It's something that's made us one of the go-to partners, financing partners for a lot of founders, even from companies where we have delivered the message, hey, this isn't going to be appropriate for Camber Creek because ABC. We're still getting referrals from that entrepreneur because they'll say, hey, Jeff, Casey, Mitchell, Jake, Lionel, JP, Alexandra, Tom, et cetera, are going to give us a straight answer. And they're going to tell us not necessarily what we want to hear, but what we ought to hear. And so I know this is a little bit digression from the point you were asking, but we try to handle that with sensitivity because obviously someone's putting effort into presenting their company and there's always that, oh, am I going to get rejected, which doesn't feel good. I've been on the other side of that table, so I know what that feels like. And we try to enhance what they're doing, even if we're not going to be the right capital partner. Of course, there's a limit to how much help we can give, but that is something that that we take quite seriously, just trying to be kind to people. And so getting back to your original question, getting dismissed out of hand only occurs if it widely misses the mark as far as the market that the company is ostensibly looking at.
We're going to close soon, but I want to ask you before we do that, where are we still far away from when it comes to the prop tech industry? What's still missing in a serious way? Because we all know that everybody's pouring money into this industry, into this, you know, sector that is called prop tech. And we know that the real estate market is, you know, is willing today to start, I would say, educating itself, taking things in, but it's still far away. What is still far away? Can you be a little bit more specific about this?
Well, it's your question, but yes, I'll try.
I have my own opinion, of course, but I want to hear yours.
My opinion is that we are right where we need to be. And I don't know if you were asking me a question about, a lot of people use the sports metaphor, what inning are we in? I don't know if that was your question. If that's your question, then I would say we're in early innings. If you're asking what's missing, that's a very difficult question to ask, because the moment it's missing in an efficient market, there should be something filling it. So I think when you're seeing the plethora of companies that are being founded every day to address the problem set that is uniquely presented by real estate, that's telling you that we're right where we need to be. If you ask me what could be enhanced, well, wouldn't it be awesome if there was liquid metal that you could just put up a building without any stoppage of work on a street, et cetera? Sure, that'd be amazing. But I think we're decades, if ever.
Yeah, you turned it a little bit into the philosophical, no, but I get
right,
it.
You see my point?
Yeah.
So
yes,
I think we are right where we need to be. There's plenty that can be filled in and made more efficient. And I think we're starting to see that with a number of the companies that we've invested being bought by larger companies, or M&A from some of the larger players in the space that's still trying to feel out, well, how do we take potentially a niche solution or even a platform and apply it to our current business? Those questions are still being asked. So I'm going to answer your question with a...
Yeah. So I'll tell you my take on that very quickly. But when you talk about platforms, of course, and I had this discussion with, I think LD Salmonson, it was from Sherry. And we spoke
He's
about...
fantastic.
I love him. And we spoke about the whole concept of big data, and he put it in, you know, such a great way, that even though they try to gather all the data, the world is just not, you know, it's still not there. You know, you want to have it, you want to work on it, you have the systems already, but so much is still missing in order to gather all those things, and that's still evolving.
But the same but time, that's
what
the
you
point.
Said is also true. Yes.
Because the missing variables in whatever data sets he's creating are being filled by entrepreneurs that are saying, huh, LD is now what I would consider one of the titans of prop tech, and certainly one of the most intelligent people I've had the pleasure of speaking
yeah,
with. And by the
100%.
Way, that's an example. Camber Creek is not an investor in Cherry. Because when we met LD, the product that he was, I suppose, supporting and building at the time was not apropos to our LP base. It didn't mean that the company wasn't amazing. And it is. It's become an absolutely amazing company. And so he's one of those people that, when you think about, one, the amount of jobs they've created, but two, they've created a cottage industry themselves by having other entrepreneurs look at the data that's missing and saying, let's create something that can actually feed into LD's platform. I think that's just amazing. So that's why I say we're right where we need to be.
Exactly. I love this. Tell me something. You guys obviously are vetting, just like you said, 1,000 companies a year, I guess, like you said, right? Or more. So you guys are busy, but you know, everybody's listening here and they want to contact you and they want to reach you. And obviously you guys can see the links. But Jeffrey, what would you tell people? How can they, you know, go and try to reach out to you, whether they are investors or they are companies, they are startups who want to get into the market and want to be invested in?
LinkedIn is the best way.
LinkedIn is incredible. So you guys heard it. Jeffrey, I really appreciate your time. I think this was great. And every time I talk prop tech, I get excited. And to talk to a pioneer, you know, a pioneer like such as yourself was exciting, was amazing. And I really thank you and appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. And also, let's just give a shout out to our bandwidth providers for, there was almost like zero lag in this conversation with the video.
Oh, yeah.
So that's amazing technology.
Awesome. Thumbs up. You guys heard it. And I'll see you guys in the next show. Thank you for listening. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.